This podcast is in partnership with Design Biennale Rotterdam, Phoenix Museum, Lack of Guidance, Margreet Olsthoorn, New Institute and Rotterdam Partners, as they all share the common goal to create awareness, share opinions and empower creative growth.
I would say maybe by stepping all the time in and outside of comfort zones. That's how I also have to reflect all the time on my own actions and behavior and opinions. I think this is one of the nice things about our professions. I mean, people might think that we're all competing because we have competitions all the time, etc. But the other side is that people are also really helpful. We make jokes about it, but at the same time, you also sense like I'm an outsider in this world. Yeah, you automatically feel excluded because you're different.
In today's episode, I'm joined by Nathalie de Vries, a founding partner of MVTV and a professor at Delft University of Technology. Nathalie opens up about the journey in architecture, the transformative power of teaching, and how personal growth plays a crucial role in professional success. Tune in for a conversation about leadership, resilience, and the lessons learned from stepping outside your comfort zone. Hello, good day, Nathalie de Vries.
Hello, Bastiaan.
Welcome in the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
First question, can you describe where we are today?
Yeah, we are in the office of MVRDV, architects and urbanists in Rotterdam, old Maaskant building, and one of the colored room. But, Bastiaan, we are in the black room today.
Yes, you can't see me.
I see your face floating.
How is life treating you at the moment?
It's fine. Yeah, I cannot complain. I have a lot of nice things to do. I have a lot of nice things at hand, very varied also, here in the office and working on great projects. Some of them are being built. I just went abroad to give some lectures and visit some potential new clients. Yeah, I'm also teaching.
Yes, and teaching is quite an important element. Yeah. Is it ever boring to do what you do for decades?
No. No, maybe sometimes some situations are repeating, which is not, of course, strange. After more than 30 years in practice, things do can happen again. But no, in general, every project takes you in a new place with new people. Students come and go, and there's always new events happening. And the world is changing as well. Plus, what we have to design for it, yes.
And you have to adapt, probably.
Absolutely, yeah.
How do you do this? How do you stay ahead of the curve?
Ahead. Let's say accommodate. We accommodate the curve with buildings and master plans. So you have to keep an open eye and curiosity, like I said already, I think. So how can we feel comfortable in this world is an important part of what architects have to do.
You mentioned teaching is a very important element for you. And in a different interview, you also mentioned that it keeps you sharp.
Yeah.
Because you got a lot of feedback from different generations. What is one of the last lessons or in the past year that you thought like, wow, okay, it's good that they showed up today because this changed my perspective?
Well, an example I use a lot lately is, I'm teaching, but it's also part of my practice because I'm asked. Because I'm a practitioner, to teach and talk about my work and what I experience. I remember a couple of years ago showing some projects of MVDV in a lecture. And then one finger was raised in the auditorium and somebody said to me, but what is exactly sustainable about this project?
Yeah.
Yes. Ow. And it's like, well, 20 years ago, we were very concerned about saving energy. So these kind of questions really show me that what we did in the past is not necessarily the same as what we should do in the future. I think we're now in a time where things are changing so rapidly and also regarding how we build. These kind of questions with the students make you even more aware of it. Huh? So in an office environment, you might still think like, well, it's not so bad. But for students, everything is new and they're very much about the now and the future, of course. Yeah, making very aware that we need to change a lot of things in my profession of architecture.
And when you hear the feedback from your students and you are confronted in such a way that you thought like, wow, this is way different than we do it at our studio.
Well, it certainly helps because I think the teaching from practice also means that I can sometimes make students survey things that I speculate about. that we speculate about with the team, and they can go much deeper in uncertain paths, speculate about hybrid buildings, speculate about new types of tall buildings. That is also quite inspiring. So through working with the students, I also learn a lot for myself. It's easier for my own people because they don't have to go all the way. You know, in the office, you do what you can. And with students, you can get a very long way. I'm not quite answering your question, Bastia.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I still have plenty more.
So, but if I think about what's the exchange, I think you all the time investigate and research the same topics, but with different means, one could say, with different perspectives, with different possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as a teacher, between students and your own teams, you seem to be like a bridge and you reflect a lot. Do you also reflect a lot about your own personality?
I'd say less. Maybe not so conscious. No, never really very conscious. You get feedback, of course. Yeah, that can be positive or negative. Yeah, so I definitely learn from the feedback I'm getting. But I'm not somebody who goes soul searching or even on a retreat or meditating. I don't spend a lot of time thinking back. I'm more like the person who is preparing all the time for something to come, I think. Yes.
Well, that's also a very good trait.
I would not say that I don't prepare. I like preparing very much. Yeah. So I think through what is ahead of me. Also, very pragmatic ways, like a presentation or an event, or I'd like to think about that in advance.
Because you also mentioned in another interview, we don't look back so much as a studio, instead into the future. And imagining possible outcomes is an important role of a designer.
Yeah.
Is this then also a trait that you put on your personal development?
Yeah, I think it's more like when you have an advertisement for a financial product. Eh? So good results in the past don't guarantee good results in the future. Of course, I'm lying if I say that I don't look back at all. For example, sometimes we make a book or an exhibition, and then absolutely it's a fantastic way of looking back and see what have we done so far. Can you recognize certain threats or developments? But in general, I think, of course, experience is interesting and important to have. But nevertheless, it can also be a dangerous thing to lean back too much and think, oh, I've done that, been there, this has always worked. I think in my profession, this is it's not the only thing you should rely on.
The comfort zone.
Yeah, and... I do learn from experiences, of course. That's a good question, Bastiaan, maybe. Yeah.
That's why we're here. Thank you.
But I do think, I'm talking about you, I'm also not completely honest, because I think with the teaching, I can step outside of the office, for example. I'm at the office, I'm reflecting on the teaching. But also, I've done all kinds of other things in my life.
You've done a lot.
Yeah, and all these activities were very good for reflection on why and what I was doing, because I was, of course, not able in those other functions to perform my original job. So I had to look at it from a different angle and I had to deal with it in a different way. For example, teaching, I'm in a completely different context with different people. People expect different things from me. So all the time I have to change my position. And also, I know that people expect other things from me or other types of decisions even. I would say maybe by stepping all the time in and outside of comfort zones, that's how I also have to reflect all the time on my own actions and behavior and opinions.
Is this also something that you would like to give as a tip?
For me, it works. Yeah, because things never get really easy. Yeah, it's like with the looking back question. You think you know something, but then you apply it in a different context and it doesn't work at all. Like you say, people say, huh, well, what's going on here? So for me, that's maybe the best way to develop myself and reflect upon myself by putting myself constantly in different contexts.
Have you changed a lot over the past decades?
As a person?
As a person?
Yes and no. I must admit that also when I was young, I already liked to take the lead sometimes. I was always quite engaged, let's say, with society. I liked the arts and culture. I was not afraid to speak out my mind. No, I think at root, I'm the same person as I was in the past, but of course with a lot more experience.
You mentioned in the beginning of the answer that you took the lead more often. I see you different because I see you as a current person that leads a lot. Do you see yourself as a role model?
Oh, that's definitely true. But maybe because I always do these things very consciously, I never really considered it as a change. It's more like, do I do it or not? So in architecture, of course, there was at some point starting a kind of cult of the persona. And with MVRDV, our name already signifies this. We didn't want it to be about us as persons so much. So I deliberately avoided even acting as a person on my own. Later on, I realized that it's still something different from acting as a person or speaking out as a person. I thought, but that's of course also when you're younger, you're more insecure. You know, you're still shaping that public persona as well. So you think people start to think about you in a certain way. And then I have to influence that by avoiding certain aspects. I always avoided in the early years to talk about myself as a woman or as a mother or as a mother and woman combining her work with her personal life kind of stuff. Or pretending that I did everything on my own, all these kind of things. So I was very much into the we and into the shaping of what I thought MVRDV should be. And I think rightfully so. I think that worked.
Yes.
For the office as a whole, for all of us. I think we all did that to some degree. But then later on in life, I understood, of course, also that people do know me and the ex, would like to hear things from me and that I can also help by speaking out. So I started to do that very actively when I was president of the Royal Institute of Dutch Architects, voorzitter. The Dutch word sounds a bit less serious. I realized actually that when they asked me what are the aspects of the profession that you would like to put forward, the diversity and the role of women, that I had to speak out and that I had to be there also as a person, because you can also be a role model. Yeah, or you can also say, well, look, here I am, I managed, and I might have some, I might help you to be to also achieve your goals to a certain degree, or to inspire, let's say. Yeah.
Is it easy to have such a position or find out that you actually...
Yeah, I think when you're a bit older and maybe more secure already about what you exactly are and what your role can be, I was chairing that institute. But then again, you also have to be careful. Huh? You can have all these fantastic role models, but it might not really apply to you. Could even say it's easy for me to speak, like I'm leading a firm, I'm to some degree known in my world. No, but I did think what I managed to do then is to challenge my fellow female colleagues in the we organized events and we started to speak out that it might not be so common and that we experience different things maybe than our male colleagues in general felt. And I think that was important that we started to speak out, not about success, but also about problems and failures and complications. I'm very glad that more women were willing to do so. And we did. And I think I also sense that now I wouldn't say that I necessarily started this, but a lot of women still do until today. Not afraid anymore to mention that.
Do you see a change? Is it measurable to see what you initiated together with others or on behalf of yourself?
Well, I hope it helps to show people in the same position that you can achieve certain goals. Yeah, I think everybody needs role models, right? I also looked at other people. I was lucky to be able to work for Francine Hooben when I was very young, see her at work. And I realized in hindsight, of course, also how important that is. Even looking at, for example, Zaha Hadid, it's like, there's also a woman in the field, you know, there are not that many.
Can you give an example about what you learned or saw at Meccano by Francine Hooben? What made a huge difference for you?
I think nothing held her back. And she was a young woman. She was pregnant at the time I was working there also. I never felt a second that she did things differently because of it. It was all about the designing and working, and it didn't make her a different person. It didn't make her a different designer. I think that's very good. But it was possible also. I know it's possible. Yeah.
And this is also something that you communicate to your own teams, people working at MVTV?
You can, of course, facilitate it to a certain degree, how you are an employer, that you can work here for 4 days, that people are able to combine family and life. Albeit in our profession, it's always a bit strange with the deadlines and all. But I don't think you have to do it all one-on-one. But it's, you have to acknowledge that these things exist.
Of course.
It's perfectly normal.
You mentioned in another interview, my husband and I worked 4 days a week when the children were small.
Yeah.
Can you share your experiences of that time?
Oh, yeah. Yes. I think in the Netherlands, especially in those days, it was never, ever accepted that children go to daycare full time. Eh? So that's one thing we have to realize already. But we also didn't really want that. So we didn't have parents who could step in either. So we decided to both work 4 days a week, and then on the fifth day you do things like swimming lessons, ballet classes. I have two daughters. shopping, and it actually of course you do every now and then a little bit of work. No, so that worked well for a couple of years until they were like 10 or a bit older, and they said, I don't want to go to this after school things anymore. I want to go home by myself. And but we always did that together. So I'd say I never felt that I was there. I was doing these things by myself. So Jacob, also a partner here, of course, and me did that together and happily. Absolutely. Yeah. And it also sometimes limits the type of travels you could do or how long you could stay away. We had another interesting feature because we're, of course, working together as a couple. We have one benefit is that we could share one secretary. So that means she could perfectly match our calendars. And we had also our own days on which we could travel or be late. So it was quite carefully
Sounds like a perfect match, but I can't believe that it was perfect.
Oh, we had our crisis moments, believe me.
I don't need to hear the personal details, but not for the listener.
I also mean with things not quite matching or somebody that has to fly home and the other is already departing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
2 days are in the past now. Yeah.
As a person, how do you deal with such moments? Because it fuels you probably with some degree of stress.
Yeah. I think for many people, I also heard it in your podcast when you interviewed others, this is also a moment where you start to realize that you have to set some boundaries here and there in your time, in your day. And it always felt very nice to eat at home, for example, not work nonstop. It also can take your mind off things, of course, when you start to take care of your children. You have something completely else that you can do. So it will also ended a period of working nonstop, almost. So it was also good and healthy, I'd say. And we also always say, when you have children, you actually have to manage your time much better than if you don't have children. So it also sort of limits.
Has it changed you a lot as a person and as a professional?
I would like to say yes, because you have to take care of somebody else who's dependent on you. And it also opens your eyes, of course, for a different way of living and having to live with children and for how young kids see the world. It's the same now. Our parents are older. That we also start to realize what it's like to be an older person in this world. So I must admit that I also loop it back again right away to my own profession. But you see the world with different eyes. Absolutely. Yeah.
You come from the north of Holland, and you already described your parents are there. Shall we go back a little bit as a summary for the people listening, where you came from and how you grew up and actually ended up at founding MVTV?
Yeah, I was born in Appingedam, but I didn't live there for long, although my grandparents did. I visited Appingedam for many, many years. But we had a small interlude in Hengelo, and then I went back to the north. My father is a teacher, so he went where his job took him, and as a young teacher he had to sometimes move school. So ultimately he ended up teaching in Winschoten, and after some years we moved to a village called Oude Pekela. So basically that's where I grew up. I miss a lot of cycling to school, back and forth. My mother was, she stopped working when she got married. And one of the benefits of a teacher is it has the same holidays as a children, of course. So some years we went out camping. But we would go typically to France and later and to Germany. And later he also went to Scandinavia, but then I already left the house. I went there once. And it was always very nice. And on the weekends, we would go to do some sightseeing or walking or go to the museum or walk in the park or visit one of these many little burgjes and slotjes that are in, little estates that you have all scattered all over Groningen, or visit family for that matter. But, you could say my parents were quite outgoing, took me places. We would also, and in hindsight, that's quite peculiar, I think. If there would be a new neighborhood built, we would go there and drive around and have a look at it. As a young person, my interest in culture was already sparkled, and I liked that as well, and I liked music. That was nice. That was nice. Yeah, we got out and about. But it sounds remote living in Oost-Groningen, but it didn't feel like that until when I was young. But then when I grew older, of course, I thought I have to get out, study somewhere. For a long time, I thought it would be in the city of Groningen. But one of my teachers at school found out that I was interested in architecture. And he helped by connecting me to his brother-in-law, who was at the time studying at TU Delft, and said, he will probably be okay to show you around for a day. And nowadays, that's actually really normal, because all young kids can go to university for a day. And I didn't really was connected that much that I would know what an open dag, an open day was. So I was very fortunate. And he showed me around for a whole day, and I could ask him anything. And after that, I felt assured that I could take the step to actually go and study there, because it did feel like a big step. I mean,
can imagine.
Yeah. Nobody in my school, I think maybe one person would go to Delft, you know. People would do all kinds of studies, but nobody would go to a technical university, for example.
What motivated to do so? Because you, in the beginning of the talk, you talked about stepping out of comfort zones many times. Was that already within you at the beginning?
Apparently, I was not afraid to take that step, but well, as a young child, it's a bit classic, I guess, for architects. I like drawing. I made collages from magazines that my mother bought. I cut out furniture and stuff. So I collaged interiors. I drew homes. Yeah, so by the time I was 11, 12, I was already thoroughly interested in those kind of things. And I did it by myself. And later on, I got also more engaged in politics, because also my parents did that a lot. They were quite active. Well, ultimately, it started to dawn on me that you can in architecture, you can combine those two things. So kind of social engagement and creativity. Yeah, so for me, it felt like the perfect study, and it was.
And after TU Delft, you went to Meccano?
My first very full-time serious job was at Meccano. I also worked shortly for Pieter Weda. And during my studies, I worked for Roland van Duivenbode and Thierry de Jong. So I want to acknowledge them as well. I did an internship, but these were all things that lasted shorter or were just for a couple of days a week.
Why do you want to mention them?
I think if you say you went, you studied and then you went to Meccano, that's not quite right, no? Because I also worked for some other offices and that also formed me.
I know, but I also know a lot of interviews with you, and it's not always in there.
No.
So that's, but this is the podcast a little bit more.
Listening and reading, I'm thinking, like, why don't I mention that as well?
Are there special things that you learned at those periods that brought you to Meccano in a different way?
Well, first of all, experience. So
of course, what did you
when I came there, I could sort of say, I was interviewed at the time by Erik van Egeraat, and I also did some other job interviews, but people said, do you have experience? And I said, yes. It felt somehow that it was important, because they always asked it. And although it was, of course, very limited, I bluffed my way, let's say, a little bit into Yeah.
Is this a tip for us?
It's absolutely a tip. Yeah. We bluffed also in the beginning of our office. Bluffing is a part.
Yes,
part of, is a way into, yeah. I'm not necessarily saying lying, but I was also not like as very seasoned project leader, which was, of course, obvious seeing my age and when I graduated. I mean, the people who were interviewing me probably knew quite well. No, but I think being able to work in an office as an intern. I mean, for example, my internship in Barcelona, that was really, I was thinking, it was in my fifth year of my study. I was like, now I have to finish my study really fast because practice is much fun. It's now getting much more fun than studying. So let's say it really stimulated me there. And I also liked it that I worked in these other offices. I had been doing my fair share of cleaning.
All kinds of jobs.
All kinds of jobs. When I was at school, I worked for the HEMA. So I thought, if I spent my time, I want to spend it on my work. So
I find this quite interesting. What did you learn in those moments? Because it's also very practical. But interviewing other people, for instance, Kim Heine, she mentioned that hospitality, working in restaurants, for instance, is crucial for her work.
You're quite an invisible. You notice how invisible people are in those jobs. That's kind of sad. Everybody does their utmost best. It learns you to be humble. You have to work very hard also. So I always respect people with those jobs as well. And I know how important that is as well. Perseverance, you know, it's not always nice, but you have to keep on going. It's tough sometimes. Why is it important? Yeah, it gives you some kind of, like I say, perseverance and to go on and to earn your own money.
Is this also something that you give to your students?
Not so long ago, I was standing in front of a group of first years and somebody said like, oh, you all look very tired. It was at the end of the year before summer. Did you work all night or have you slept at all this week? And I said to them, or did you manage and plan quite well? No, it should not be this sort of cult of working and organizing. That's not something I tell my students. I think it's more like I want to help them develop their thoughts in certain steps. So I think what's quite important is that we help them guide, I would say we, because we're also a team, guide them through certain steps and decision making during the design process so that you reach the goals in time. Yeah. So actually, it's quite a concept. It's called research by design. It's also about how you can use different kinds of input to improve your design and get inspired by it as well and to make the design better. So it's very much also about certain methodology and going step by step and talking to the students, like, where are you now? What are your problems at this moment? How can I make you take the next step? What we learn students, but also what we should do in the office, is to be very mindful of the process itself. And in that is, of course, also time management itself. No, I wouldn't necessarily cultivate this sort of all-nighters.
You mentioned in another interview, when I was teaching my students, they all had to work hard because of deadlines. Then someone said, well, those deadlines are part of the architectural profession. And you went against this.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's what I just said. I'm not saying there are no deadlines. We are actually, I would say it's also helping and feel the pressure. I know a lot of architects, including myself, that thrive under having a deadline.
Including myself.
Or something. Yes. I wouldn't say it's not motivating. Doing it as such, we also all know, of course, it's also not so effective. After one or two nights, how productive are you still? Can you still think straight? Are you able to give a good presentation? No. So I wouldn't say feeling the pressure is necessarily bad. But if we just say if you work long and hard enough and all-nighters, that's okay. No, I think there are other tips and tricks and traits. And it's also to set it up in a good way. You can also have a strategy.
In our interview, you mentioned before that you worked quite a lot in the beginning of your career.
Yeah.
Now you give an answer, which is quite the opposite, like it's good to have pressure, but not all-nighters anymore. Do you have learned yourself, nurtured your talent and your well-being in a certain way that is now teachable for others? Do you have something like a tip? Because I can imagine that people still think, yeah, but you have the experience already. I'm just starting, making meters.
I don't know if I'm the best example because I still cross my own boundaries a lot. Eh? So I've been going abroad last week with jet lags and all, and didn't really stop or take a break or recovered really really well. What can I say? I'd say it's less extreme than in the past, and we are more mindful of it. We take care of it. We monitor it. We register it. We acknowledge it. And if we can do something about it, we should. The thing with the deadline remains a given, but being aware of it and doing something about it is, I think, what's key.
Have you been in situations where you thought, like, I need to change myself or adapt different certain situations to prevent myself?
Yeah, I think when I'm very busy or when I do multiple things at the same time, I do more and more, let's say, plan my week in another way or consciously do certain things. Like I can say, do I also do all the lecturing? Do I travel far away or do I let someone else do the traveling? Of course, you can deliberately skip certain parts of your agenda in favor of something else. Yes, it has to be done. I think that's maybe even with the 4-day working with the kids kind of, you have to be home at 6 and cook a meal. Or, so you know you can control it somehow. So you have to figure out the right limitations.
Traveling is a very important part of your career in the office. And when you described your upbringing in Groningen, you mentioned that your father was a teacher and that he was always having a holiday when you were having a holiday.
Yeah.
I can imagine that growing your office and traveling so much, there's a different dynamic at home. How do you talk with your partner Jacob about holidays and traveling when you have the experience of a parent that is always there? I'm not saying that you were never there, absolutely not.
No.
But I can imagine that it crossed your mind quite a lot.
Yeah, I do think we try to have a bit the same experiences with our own children. And also my partner, Jacob, went on similar kind of holidays with his parents. I think we try to replicate that. But yeah, when you're an architect, something odd appears as well, that you are on a location. And you do some sightseeing, maybe in a bit more extreme ways, as my parents did. So I think when the children were really small, we had this sort of rule of one day something interesting to look at, and the other day playgrounds, the beach, etc. So we try to dose it. And sometimes we deliberately went to regions where there was only nature. So it was really nothing architectural or urban to be. Yeah. So you kind of plan that.
You've seen the world.
Yeah. Yeah. You've seen the world. And but it's still funny. My children still say they are quite knowledgeable about certain things. And one of them studied design as well. So they do say things like, what do you think in the... When we were young, we would always look at designs or buildings or, you know, go on a tour through a house. So they for them, it still felt a lot, I think. Is this what you meant with your...
absolutely.
Your question. But I think it's also nice as a parent that you show your enthusiasm to your kids, no? Like my parents, especially my father, was very into politics, in the local politics. But I mean, I saw that and I also engaged and it inspires you as well, I think.
I'm very happy with the answer. And it's not per se that I'm looking for a particular answer.
No.
But I know you a little bit. And
yeah.
Through the years that I worked with you, I also noticed that you care a lot about your family and that you also protect this in quite a good way.
Yeah.
But I also find it very interesting to trying to understand what it does with you and Jacob, because the office is like a train. It's moving. It's your office, but somehow it's not your office. You have to adapt so much. So that's where I always try to imagine how it is being a parent and working at such a level.
I mean, for our children, it also came with some advantages. I mean, we went to Japan when they were really young. So when they got older, they said, you'd always tell me I was in Japan, but I was 2. So we went again when they were in their teenage years, almost leaving home. No. So I think it opened something for them. I can see now that they like that and that they like to travel and that they don't care and they don't mind to go out and about. So I think it also opened possibilities for them. It's a challenge, of course, to keep some kind of balance and to keep that nice. Yeah, for them as well, this life. Yeah.
Was there ever a moment that you said to yourself or to Jacob, okay, not anymore, not like this?
I tried to avoid extremities, I guess. And we did have our weekends and we did have our evenings and we did have dinner at home. At least with one parent, that was the rule. Always one parent should be at home. Yeah, so I don't think it was that extreme, to be honest.
Sounds very good.
Yeah. Try to keep it within sane boundaries, yes.
Do you feel responsible for this generation and the next?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, well, in many ways, we should feel responsible, I guess, as society as a whole, huh? Because we're burning all the fuels now. And we also have to think about how our profession can change. I think there's indeed also, you sense now what's been talked about a lot, all the different generations of people and how they see and feel being approached in their work. And we recently had a discussion here in the office about the sensitivity for diversity. So there are many discussions going on in the office now about being a woman, about being somebody from the LGBTQ plus community, but also in other ways when you can feel left alone. It's not just generations. I think it's society as a whole that is kind of growing, and that we have become now aware of sensitivities. It's not always easy, but acknowledging that, I think, is already something very important because, we say also that we are happy and that we're inclusive, etc. Hey, you can find it on our website even. But what does it really mean? It, of course, also starts with yourself and with your own designs. Yeah.
Yeah, because as an architect and urban planner, you focus a lot on public spaces and community. How do you nurture this, actually? And does it also, in the same way-ish, work for your teams?
How do we nurture it? Yeah, it's about the way how you make designs, I think. We do emphasize a lot allowing for different things to happen, but also making, for example, homes, not in a singular way, but with many different variants and tastes. So we try to offer spaces that can be accommodated by many people or where many people feel welcome. That's very important. But having said that, my industry, as I might maybe call it, the building industry, is still quite male-dominated. And I think this is what's one of the most complicated things. Clients, the builders, the other consultants. So we operate in a world which is still, to a large part, male-dominated. Women are definitely not in the majority there. In a minority, so you're often, for example, the only one at the table, or there's only one other woman. So, for example, for women, it can be quite tough. And also the way people think about the world, huh? If they're your clients, they wrote the assignment, the brief, that means something. So you actually have to be double aware of that, what effect that might have. But it's also maybe inside in our office we can have a nice and diverse society. But what happens if you would take one step outside?
How do you deal with situations where you find your own values be compromised by what the client wants?
Yeah, you have to start the conversation then. Yeah, but you also have to see it. So being a woman might be able, you might be able to recognize it. But what if you're a guy amongst other guys? Do you recognize it, for example? That's an interesting, complicated question. But it's not just the outcome of a design. It's maybe also the world that you have to operate in. Yeah, we always make jokes again here in the office when we have to go to some kind of real estate fair. We send pictures to each other of all the guys walking around there in the blue suits and the brown shoes. But yeah, who are like 2 heads taller than you are. So we make jokes about it, but at the same time, you also sense like I'm an outsider in this world. Or you automatically feel excluded because you're different. How do we deal with that? Yeah, you can't change it overnight. But I did notice again in that period when I was with this Institute of Dutch Architects, that at the same time also Dutch Engineers Association also got a female president. You now have VNO-NCW, Ingrid Thijssen, it's also a woman leading the business association. Also the developers, NEPROM got a female president. I think there's some self-awareness going on in the world. And we always say, how can you build for everybody if you yourself are not, you know, inclusive? We work in North America now, and there we even include indigenous original inhabitants in the design teams now, quite a lot. So that's a whole new level again. So then we are all, as white people, kind of the colonizers. Yeah.
Did you ever had a mentor? Or several people that are very important next to Francine Hoeben?
Mentor, I'd say that a lot of these people I worked for in my early years, but also others, older architects, I found it very nice that if I knew them, I could call them. So in the early years, I did definitely, if I had a question about something, I would call one of them and they would always help me. And also we had a bit of peer-to-peer contacts as well. So with some of the other offices that are now, you know, from our own same generation, we would always help each other out and could call each other.
Was that vital for you?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Can you describe maybe a situation without going too much in detail? What made?
Yeah, well, with my I think I wouldn't say it happened every day, but people from Meccano, like for example Henk Dull or this Ronald van Duyfbode, I could call if I have questions about contracting or how to deal with a certain client financially. I also remember that I sort of got acquainted with Koen van Velsen. And we got our first job for VPRO, and we also could start to do the interior. And I had no clue how to set up an interior contract or way of working. How do you do that? Because in those days, we were still much more maybe independent in those senses. And I remember I met him. A friend of mine worked for him, and I met him at a party at his home. And I called him and I said, well, how did you do that? You did the Rijksacademie. And he said, well, he completely explained to me how he set that up and how he would approach it. So those things I remember quite well. So being collegial and helping your friends, but also helping young architects who left here and start up their own firm. I also always tell them, like, if you have any questions, let me know. And I think this is one of the nice things about our professions. I mean, people might think that we're all competing because we have competitions all the time, etc. But the other side is that people are also really helpful and collegial, and that people, yeah. Until now, I'm not doing that a lot anymore because I don't need it anymore so much. But I'm pretty sure that if I call a friend or a colleague, they would help me out.
And vice versa.
So we're in this together. I've also had questions and helped people or referred people or told people how we did things. Certain international issues I'm not, of course, now I'm now more in the lead and we have a lot of specialists here. So I don't know if the questions come directly to me. So I think this is one of the nice things of being an architect. I still have a lot of friends who are, of course, also architects. And we talk to each other about certain aspects. Like maybe we started quite young, so some of my friends are a bit older than I am now. So there's a lot of talking now also about how do you organize that there will be a next generation of people in your office and how did you do that? So you learn from each other and you exchange information. So behind the scenes, quite a lot of exchanges and nice connections. Yeah. Not as tough as you might seem, think maybe from the outside.
Looking forward is something you do a lot. About your own career, what are things that you still would like to do? Do you think about this?
You still think about working on certain types of projects, maybe in other countries. We're scaling up still, so we do ever bigger things. Yeah, so I'm going to North America a lot now, meaning USA and Canada. So that's like a new territory still. I'm trying to move up, scale up there and do more work there.
Can spend a lot of time there.
Super exciting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in that sense, there's still a lot ahead. But it's also kind of limited. So I'm working on a project now that will be ready in 5 years from now, when I'll be 60, 62, 63. That's something to think about, right?
How does a normal week or month look like for you? What happens? Do you fly so much?
No.
Are you a lot at home or?
No, I try to avoid that. So maybe it's more like every other week or so, or every 2-3 weeks. I also go to Delft, typically on Thursdays, usually.
To teach.
It depends. So when I'm in the office, I'm more talking to design teams here and have online meetings or real meetings. So I talk about projects mostly, but also about the general management of the office. There are still issues, questions there, of course. And then in a week that I'm, for example, last week I was traveling, I gave two lectures at different universities. And on the way in, I stopped over in Toronto, where I checked on some samples of a building that are under construction, some facade samples. I also visited the site of a potential new project. We're not sure yet if we would be invited to participate, but I checked in on the site. I visited a local urban design office that we want to collaborate with. And on the way out, I visited two clients, potential clients. So acquisition. I did acquisition in a city I hadn't been in before and talked about potential of us working for them.
Sounds amazing. Never a dull moment, yes.
It's really nice. And what was kind of funny, because you're saying, what can you get from this? So I was thinking indeed, okay, now I'm lecturing at other universities. Should I keep on doing this? I wasn't quite sure because I'm already teaching. So, but the interesting thing is I was at two American universities and everybody there was totally obsessed with AI and the future of that. So they're much more close to the developments, I think. And I realized how much they were thinking and talking about it there. So it was like I said, almost an obsession. And the universities were thinking about it, like, what should we teach our students? What do we as a teacher know about it? So it was this feeling of there's this really fastly emerging technology and tool. What will it do to us and to our profession? So after you've been in such, if you've been talking about it and questioned about it so much, and you come back, you also start to think again, like, oh, I should actually be also, you know, wake up even more because something's happening, you know, they're a bit closer to the fire. So let's not forget these kind of things, which might be potentially very influential on the profession. Is it really just a tool that we're going to apply? Or is there something more? Mm. So that was actually what everybody was asking themselves. I visited two different universities. One was more in a bit more rural situation, the Kent, and the other Carnegie Mellon, technical, in a more technical environment, actually very close to inventors of AI, etc. And I mean, obviously there were some teachers already working on the topic, but a lot not, like many of us. What, you know, this software and everything is just emerging last year, right? Since how long can we use it? Mm-hmm. If you're not a specialist. But it also realizes me that going out and about, that's maybe what you were referring to, it does give you sort of suddenly a kind of click, like, hey, there's something going on. And how much are we in our office, in our work, dealing with this? I'm glad we are already, that we have people here in the office who think about it. But it also, it has to keep you sharp. That's your profession. The professions like ours, where we consult and advise people also, are, of course, will be impacted by this type of new technology. Yeah, I mean, when I started digitalization in itself, I've studied on the drawing board, but my office is now full of computers. So you know how fast these things can go. Yeah, so you also always should be aware that your profession might change profoundly or at some day might not exist anymore in the way that you knew it. And we're running a business here now, there's hundreds of people here. So you always have to be sharp for these kind of changes. And what I like then, for example, being at the technical university, that's also a place where you can talk much more about the ethical consequences of it. Why would you do it? What kind of information are we using? Who owns the information? To what extent is it good or bad for our profession? So being out and about and meeting others, I guess that's for many professions interesting, I guess. But you feel a bit like on a discovery trip sometimes as well.
Some A or B questions, 2 or 9.
Okay.
Are you more rational or more emotional?
Rational.
More practical or romantic?
Practical.
More strategy or intuition driven?
Oh, Yeah, that gets harder. So that we are intuition driven. I think intuition comes into it a lot as well. Yeah.
Why the doubt?
And then the strategy. Well, I was thinking maybe a bit more about the order of things. Yeah.
You can also say both.
Right. I thought do or die.
It is, but many people...
It's hard to make a choice here, Bastian.
I'm very...
In favor of the concept of the podcast, of the strategy of the podcast.
Thank you. Seek comfort in routine or thrive on constant change.
Oh, constant change. Yeah. Definitely.
Adopt a proactive approach to challenges or react as situations arise.
Proactive.
Do you see yourself as a pioneer or an observer at the sideline? And I don't say that an observer is not doing anything, keeping the overview.
I think you have to be quite observant to do this profession. So even if I might not be, I would like to be observant. Yes. But the sideline suggests that I'm looking at it and I also want to be part of it. So, what did I not just say? I didn't make a choice, right?
I don't mind.
Yeah.
Many people participated. Also, sometimes didn't make a change. Team sport or individual sport?
I like both, I guess. Yeah.
Have you played sports? Play sports?
Yeah, when I was a child, I played field hockey. And but I think now I'm older and I don't have a lot of time. I have to indeed,
Well, you walk tennis, a lot, probably.
Tennis, and nowadays it's fitness. So out of practical reasons, now I'm more individual sports, but it's just a time management problem.
Are you thinking about this a lot, about physical well-being?
Recently, yes, more, because I also realize I have to stay fit somehow and strong.
Never design again or never be involved in education again?
Never design again. That's what I would not like to stop.
Risk taker or conservative approacher?
Oh, risk taker.
Mental health in education, dedicated classes or integrated curriculum?
Individual teaching is super important in my profession. Yes, the individual talk and the very small groups. And this is one of the best things about also, I think, my school in Delft, that we have very tiny classes and that there's a lot of... But I'd say education, I think it's really both, because often in this one-on-one conversation, you cannot avoid talking about how are you, where are you standing. And especially after the COVID, I got more and more aware of it, because actually during COVID, the teaching was very one-on-one. Mm-hmm. Right? So you would open the screen and then you would look into the student room. And it would always, the conversation would first be like, how are you doing? How are you feeling? And I think I kept that one. We all kept that one. I notice more teachers have that. It is sort of much more awareness of how the mental well-being of the person you're teaching is. How are you doing? How are you feeling?
Is that something that you use now a lot?
I think even in the office, I sense a growing awareness of it. Like also realizing sometimes the stamina you have to have with complicated clients or tough processes or losing a competition or stress. Yeah.
What's next for you in the coming months, years?
I wish I knew.
Any dreams?
No, well, I think in my work, like I said, we're still moving on to new places and new areas. So you could say we keep on designing buildings, homes, offices, public buildings, but in ever new contexts. So that's really exciting. At the university, I'm a full professor, and I now also have PhD students, and I can start up research programs. I'm trying to get grants. So on the one hand, like an expansion of the experience, but also a deepening I see ahead of me. My group is dedicated to public buildings. And what we want to do is to try to figure out how actually public buildings in some points disappeared from neighborhoods. So, for example, post-war neighborhoods with aging society. And what are actually the basic needs that you can bring back to the homes to stay healthy and positive in your neighborhood, because that's what we now expect from our society, that everybody stays at home, takes care of him or herself as much as possible. But are there really enough facilities to do that? And what could their design be like? As an architect, you have to sort of wait until somebody asks you to do something. Huh? The commission has to come to you. Yeah, so that's one of the wonderful things of education at the universities, that you can also set up research and then potentially even help policy making, for example, but also inspire students to make good designs for that. So that's what I know. And probably other things that I don't know about. Still, like, what will the influence of this artificial intelligence be on our profession, for example? But in my personal life, my father died this year, so I have to take care of my mother much more together with my sister. So that's a whole new situation. And my children have left and are leaving the house. So that's also like a whole new era ahead of me. Yes.
Yeah, those are quite different times.
Different times. So it also feels like I'm in a new phase again. Mm. As a person.
Do you talk a lot with your partner or other people about this?
Yeah, people in the same situation, you might say. Of course, my partner, absolutely. Yeah. About everything, but indeed also with colleagues, like I said. So you also feel part of generations, right? So your friends are aging with you, going often through the same situations. It's not always, we're all going through the same phases and experiencing the same issues, I guess. So there's comfort in discussing that and talking that and sharing experiences with friends about that. Absolutely.
You strike me as a person who lives a lot in the middle, just at the moment, and also thinks a lot about the future. How do you want to be remembered by?
I don't think about that so much. I think it will be over soon, and then you...
I hope not.
No, I mean, not my life, but I think remembering will be over at some point. Maybe your children still think about you. There will be some buildings left, I guess, that you can be remembered by. That's... That's what happens if you're an architect. So I hope people still like some of the buildings that we made and appreciate that. For the rest, I don't really care that much, I must say. It's kind of funny that the first 500 of our projects are now in the archive of the new institute, because they wanted to research offices that have a lot of born digital data archive. Because we put stuff on floppy disks and hard drives and what have you not. Kind of weird stuff, especially in the beginning, CD-ROM. Yeah. And so we're... but then sometimes also they come with some questions, opening a box and see what happened. And then somebody said, yeah, I read in your notes. And I'm like, what the hell? My notes were in the archive. That's really weird. I don't know what they will dig up. I have the feeling it might be something completely random that might appear and disappear. I have no illusions about it.
Last question.
I don't mind.
What gives you hope?
What gives me hope is that we will still with, at least that we can contribute with our office to making people's life more agreeable and comfortable. And that we can help to speak out and keep on changing the profession. Because, building industry is a large polluter, uses a lot of energy. So, we have an obligation to change the way we are building and also to make people still feel happy.
And you as a person?
As a person, I'd like to keep on doing a little bit what I'm doing right now. But I'm sometimes also looking forward to having a bit more time to travel. I visit a lot of places, but I usually only stay there very shortly and briefly. So there's a lot of places I'd like to come back to and have a better look at.
Can you name one or two?
I don't know. I've been having step layovers in the Middle East, for example. You know, you're at the airport of Abu Dhabi, you landed and you go up again. I'd like to have a look at these weird, strange air places. I was giving these lectures and I thought, well, I would love to rent a car and drive here for 2 weeks through this area where I was. I don't know. It could be any place, anywhere. I don't have like a bucket list or no. I just think having a bit more time to travel and stay at places would be lovely. Yes.
Thank you for today.
Okay. Welcome. Thank you, Bastiaan, for inviting me.
That was my conversation with Nathalie de Vries. Her reflections remind us that growth happens when we're willing to change ourselves, whether it's through teaching, trying new things, or rethinking our routines. Nathalie's story highlights the importance of listening to others, staying adaptable, and embracing the evolving challenges of leadership and life. Take her advice, step out of your comfort zone, and let every new challenge shape who you are. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to click the follow button, rate the podcast, subscribe to the newsletter and spread the word so we can continue to grow the Don't Waste Eye podcast. And remember, everyone struggles and that's okay, but standing still prevents you from growing and reaching your potential. Keep moving forward because the better you become, the more you'll inspire others. Don't waste your time, don't waste your eye.